This is a podcast recorded at CB Expo, Cannabis Business Expo and Conference, on September 16, 2023 in Dortmund, Germany. At the main stage, Chinning Erkelenz, William Mook, Jürgen Bickel, and Patrick Hoffman. Moderated by Leonid Kotliar. Discuss the following topic: addressing non-financial KPIs in a saturating market, operational efficiency at the peak of globalization. Language, English. Enjoy your podcast listening.
Thank you everyone for coming on stage. Thank you to those gathered here. This panel is really about what makes a business sustainable, and we're going to define that in a couple of different ways. But just as a short preview to this discussion, many economists and analysts have said that we've reached peak globalization about a decade ago. But when you're talking about nascent industries such as cannabis, we're about a decade to two decades behind the general macroeconomic trend. So we're just now seeing this peaking globalization. And maybe a good way to define it while we're on German soil is that medical cannabis in this country currently comes from five continents. And we're lucky enough to have an importer who has experience actually importing from all those five continents. So what we want to aim to in this discussion is understand that as the global cannabis industry matures, it's susceptible more and more to the same forces, economic forces, that every other industry is susceptible to. And here we have a little bit of a panel of outliers. It's companies that have been around for quite some time that have reached not only revenue but profitability, and maybe the best suited to talk about non-financial KPIs. And perhaps what we'll get to by the end is an understanding of whether paying attention to non-financial KPIs made them profitable, or they started focusing on non-financial KPIs after they generated a revenue. I think we all have a good idea of where that point is going to be made, but let's move on to the introduction. We have Chinning Erkelenz, the founder and chairman of Bedrocan, Europe's oldest medical cannabis company, active now for 20 years and currently about one-fifth of the German market. We have Will Mücke from Artemis Growth Partners, who's the co-founder and managing partner. And Artemis Growth is one of the only investment funds that's actually focused on ESG and impact investment. In fact, they adhere to five pillars of impact investing: compassionate medical access, solutions to the opioid crisis, social justice, health and wellness, and regenerative farming. So welcome, Will. We have Mr. Jürgen Bickel, who's the co-founder and managing director of Storz & Bickel, a premier medical devices company in the cannabis space. In fact, two of their devices are actually medically approved in Germany and recommended by prescribers, which is the Volcano and the Mighty Plus. And finally, we have Patrick Hoffman, the co-founder and chief operating officer of Cantourage, a leading importer of cannabis into Europe, empowering global producers to have a share in the rising medical cannabis market. So welcome, gentlemen, to the stage. I'm very much excited to have this discussion. Let's kick it off with Chinning right away. When Bedrocan was founded, or in the process of being founded in the late 90s, how much were you focused on financial KPIs and making revenue for the company versus achieving your primary objective? And what would that objective be?
That's a lot of questions. Thank you, Leo. Of course, when you start a company, it's like swimming, you know, and you have to keep your head above water and you have to breathe. Breathing in business-wise means that you need money somehow, and you need a sight on at least break even. So when we started off in the end to work for the Dutch Office of Medicinal Cannabis and as a company, trying to be sustainable for the sake of patients also. You want to produce a product that's always there and always available to patients. You need to at least be at break even. Otherwise, you lose money. And get me right, in those years, there were no investors interested in investing in cannabis at all. It was even very difficult to get bank money for that purpose. I had to do a lot of talking in those days to get that done. So was my focus on financials? Yes, because at that time, in order to go to keep going, your financials is basically your most important goal for the time being. So you were right when you introduced by saying it's first your financials to be on order, but before you can actually focus on non-financial KPIs, and I agree to that. And that was the same for us. So the other thing is that we were basically lucky in that beginning because there was nothing there. Mm-hmm. So we were one of the only ones in those days starting off with cannabis for medicinal purposes only. And the interesting part of that was that basically we had time to develop. And we all know that time is money. So where we put in a lot of time to develop, actually, I would say from 2003 up to 2013 approximately, we just developed at a kind of break-even level. Mm-hmm. And only from there we started to make some more money as the market started increasing. So it was a kind of a trade-off in those days. Mm-hmm. Time for money, money for time. And when you get in more people in your company at some point, you're buying labor in that regard and you're buying knowledge. It was that trade-off that continuously went on. We'll discuss further what kind of non-financial KPIs came afterwards. But
and I think that's a good point and a great segue to Will, who's been investing in this space for close to a decade now, officially with Artemis, and way longer than that for some of his other ventures. So what makes cannabis so difficult to focus on non-financial KPIs? As someone who's tasked with finding needles in a haystack, what exactly are you looking for? And to echo Chaling's point, at the beginning there was no money, and some may argue in an institutional sense there's still not enough money. So how would you prioritize that deliberate picking mechanism that always looked at non-financial KPIs, even in such a nascent market?
Well, I'll first of all echo what Chaling said, which is you can't have a sustainable business if you don't have a business. So the first and foremost focus for us as investors is to look at what we believe are long-term sustainable models from a financial standpoint. But I'll take a step back. We got into cannabis understanding the history of cannabis. And so we felt that because of the social justice issues around the origins of prohibition around cannabis, there is no way that we as really Wall Street investors coming to cannabis could do anything other than invest as impact investors. Mm-hmm. It comes, I guess my background prior to being on the private equity side, I was a banker at Goldman Sachs. I left banking to start a private equity fund that was backed by the World Bank and a clutch of the European Development Banks in the emerging markets of Latin America. And the focus there was about developing on the UN mandate a sustainable model for business. That's really gender parity in the workforce, creating businesses that have stable tax revenues that can then create political stability and then grow up to be, frankly, clients of the World Bank and others. And it's a little bit of the same model here in cannabis. You need to start with their paradigm that these are all very young companies, and their first and foremost focus point should be making the business work. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you need to sacrifice the elements that will be your future KPIs of sustainability. And I think that a lot of our guiding principles were almost, in the beginning, more philosophical guides, because we were looking for teams that evoked the same principles that we wanted to evoke. And knowing that we're kind of building the airplane as we're flying it, mm-hmm. we needed to focus on getting them capital, building the business, mm-hmm. and then starting to layer in the KPIs that we want to see from a sustainability standpoint.
Makes perfect sense. And if we segue to the only hardware producer on this panel, this topic becomes a little bit easier, I would say. So you have the easiest job of everyone. You need to design a product that lasts for a long time, right? So that alone puts you in elite category. But could you go into a little bit of the genesis of the volcano and what led to essentially the quintessential medical device around the world?
Yeah. If you look to the financial side, of course, for a young company at the beginning, it was very important. It's liquidity. You know, this is your main thing. Do you have enough money for that? What do you want to do? If you want to develop a product and if you want to stay independent, of course, then you must be profitable. If not, you cannot grow, or you cannot grow fast enough. So this was the main driver. But when it comes to product development, product realization, like the volcano, of course, then during development, we always try to be reasonable, but we never worked with a target price. Mm-hmm. We never worked and said, okay, at the end, this price, this is the end customer price. For this, we have to produce it. So this is like a target for the development. We completely ignored that, and we developed a product to a point where it really was functional. You know, this was at least 20 years ago the most important thing, that is functional at all. Until today, many products are not really very good functional. Yeah, it was functional. And the quality must be there. Yeah, you don't want for at least expensive device, you don't want the customers to be unsatisfied in any way. So the quality must be there and it must last long. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was the main thing. And what we have done in this in these years, we always took then, we took the price of all items we needed and then we multiplied it by four. Yeah, and this was the end customer price, including tax in Europe. You know, this was a very simple way to go, but like this, we lived like more than 10 years. This was our our equation, and it worked well. But I think it is very important. You must be reasonable during development time. But if you are, if you work with target pricing, it comes very difficult, at least from our point of view, because then you have to make trade-offs on quality, on functionality, and there is enough market players who go this route. You know, our way is different, and so this is how it comes to the volcano, and how then it came to all the other products. And of course, when we started with the volcano and we came to the market, everybody asked, "Hey, what is this technology? What is this bag? It looks strange. It is too big. It is too expensive. It is." Whatever, you know. So there was a lot of criticism, but everybody who then who was a user and he then took a test with the volcano was of course convinced immediately. And to the medical product, of course, we are coming from Tuttlingen. Tuttlingen is in south of Germany, declares himself as the world center of medical devices. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of endoscopes and operations rooms and so on. And of course, it was from the very beginning our aim that this is a, can become a medical product who can be prescribed. And it was also, let's say, our contribution to the medical cannabis sector. Mm-hmm. Because as of today, also in Germany, if you get it prescribed, you get from the pharmacy, Bretocan, grass, but you get a jar of it and it's still an unfinished product. You need to do something else with it. You cannot, like it is, you cannot use it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can smoke a joint, you can make a tea, you can bake a cookie, or you can vaporize it. And there, the only really validated application form is vaporization with one of our devices. So it was very important. Also in the States, it was very important to have it as an argument to say, no, no, I don't have to smoke it. I can vaporize it. And so it becomes a more complete medicine. And then, yeah, but let's say from the volcano became came to the market in 2000 and became a medical device in 2010. So we needed about 10 years from the beginning to this point.
No, that's an impressive journey, and that brings us to Patrick, where his products fill your volcano devices. And when I think of Cantourage, I inevitably think of the word access is what comes to mind. Access to patients and access to producers to enter that market. So Patrick, can you define from Cantourage's point of view this word access and what it means, and go into a little bit about why that's an important non-financial KPI for you?
So to us, one of the motivations to build up Cantourage and to generate access for all global cannabis cultivators to the European pharmaceutical cannabis market was that before our company was created and became active, there were only very few players who had a GMP certificate for the cultivation and the post-harvest treatment within one building. And so out of these, back in the days, 2017, around 25,000 cultivation licenses around the globe, only a couple of dozen did have that GMP certification. As a consequence, the prices for those products have been very, very high compared to the market prices in countries and jurisdictions where that pharmaceutical status has not been necessary and still is not necessary. And to us, access means democratization for patients. So we widen the genetics, the access to different genetics, and we also lower the prices. So the second aspect of access is we understand ourselves as a catalyst for a general development that happens in all industries and was, let's say, initiated and maybe a bit accelerated by Cantourage also for the cannabis industry when it comes to the production of medical products.
Mm-hmm. I think that brings an excellent point, and I'd like to ask a question to you and Chaling, because I think you're after very similar things. You're after increasing medical access to patients, but whereas Bedrocan focus on extreme standardization and localization of that product and knowing that it can only be done in one way, you're taking a QA approach where you're delegating those QA responsibilities to your providers and then centralizing it under one umbrella. Can we perhaps talk about the pros and cons of those models between the two of you and see what the market is actually shaping to be? Is it shaping up to be more of a localized market where Bedrocan is now opening up a facility in Denmark and as the demand may warrant it may open up other facilities while Cantourage will continue to expand its reach and broad demand for product from around the world?
I think we are two different companies in that regard. I think where Cantourage is focusing on, let's say, funneling products to patients in a kind of middleman position more. We always have been focusing on the fundament of everything by producing standardized varieties to which patients have access. We have not the aim to be the only one producing for patients in that regard. So patients can have access to multiple other varieties. That's not the problem. And that is also as it should be. I think every regular product around the globe is being produced by multiple producers for multiple groups of people. So that will stay the same. To that regard, and talking about non-financial KPIs, I think what is important for us as well is beyond everything, the regulatory situation, and to improve that situation as well. Again, I will leave it to Patrick to talk more about what he sees as important. But from my perspective, from producing cannabis within a regulatory reality, harmonization, it's already a long time story for me. Harmonization of those regulations is very important. Taking, and which makes it easier for guys like Patrick to buy product because it is based on similar standards, mm-hmm. and standards that have been approved across the globe. That is something I think that is really important that has to happen over the next decade, I would say, maybe even shorter, 5 years, that we get more alignment where it's easier for producers also to step in because it's very clear what the requirements are to step in and to get onto the shelf with Patrick.
That was a big point in the previous panel as well, the harmonization of requirements to import medicine.
Yeah, it's not only import, it's also production, mm-hmm. the actual production itself. EU GMP is a nice word, but what does it mean? And what kind of products do you get? And the GMP is actually a blanket under which you do things, but what are you actually doing? And I think that's an important point where we need more equalization across the whole sector, basically. So if we are talking about THC, if we are talking about compounds in the product, what are we actually talking about? What the wording, those kinds of things. I think it's very important to have that all scheduled out and done in the right way. ASTM, for instance, the American Standards Organization, is doing a very good job. They are cooperating already with USP, the United States Pharmacopeia. They are cooperating on a standard for cannabis, not only medicinal, also recreational. I think on all sides, that is a thing we very much needed. And I hear that in your words as well, basically.
So to us, it feels a bit that, let's say, the regulation in the different countries is not harmonized when it comes to cannabis. But in general, we feel that Cantourage, and I think we've been the first company and the majority of competition is already following, let's say, the way that we've shown up as a possibility. We feel that we harmonize cannabis to all other herbal drugs which already exist. Back in the days, it was only cannabis as a herbal drug, which was treated differently, that the cultivation may not have been conducted under GACP conditions, and after the post-harvest process and all processes beyond must happen under GMP conditions. And when we reach out to the regulator, the answer was always because it's cannabis. And when we've asked the question, okay, and why is cannabis different from all other herbal drugs? The answer was always because it's a narcotic. But that separation is just, as we feel, and as also the regulator in Germany did confirm, and all over the globe, actually in Canada, in Portugal, everywhere, I think there is copies of us being implemented at the moment. We are just harmonizing cannabis to the normal pharmacopoeia on herbal drugs. And at the end of the day, the result is a product is absolutely comparable to the companies who decided to have the cultivation asset and the post-harvest treatment processes under one umbrella. Mm-hmm. This is why, let's say, my position is we are driving harmonization when it comes to cannabis because we harmonize it to all other herbal drugs. Mm-hmm.
Wilf, from an investment point of view, in terms of looking at sustainable ecosystems of this product, right? Do you see it more of a localized product meant to meet the demand specifications of that locality, or do you see more of a globalized hub and spoke model developing for the global cannabis trade?
I mean, I think in volume, when we look at business models, we want to see ubiquity, availability, and standardization. I think that drives one of our greatest points on our non-financial KPIs, which is compassionate medical access for patients. Mm-hmm. So if you can have a standardized product, you can have large volumes, it brings down the price, it makes it competitive with the illicit market. It goes into harm reduction, it goes into social justice. Mm-hmm. There's a knock-on effect that runs all the way through. Mm-hmm. So I think ultimately, as far as the large volume market, which is really going into the medicinal side, I think that hub and spoke model is very important. And then you can have disaggregated growers, central points, and the product comes into the countries. That being said, I'll look forward to a non-medical world where recreational is available. I think it's really interesting. And I go back to, on the social justice side, the creation of long-term generational wealth. I love the idea that the illicit market, which has been doing this for decades to a century, has an incredible artisanal craft effect. Mm-hmm. And so I would not like to see a world where everything is homogenized. I'd like to see quality products from certain regions. There's an element of terroir that comes out of that as well. Mm-hmm. But also there's a stylistic element that, a Northern California product versus a Colombian product versus a South African product, there's a uniqueness about that. Mm-hmm. And I think that will drive, on the consumer side, connection and content that people will identify as substantial. Mm-hmm. And then that means that those growers that have that history will be able to monetize that versus just being run over by the broader market.
And this is exactly where you have to separate markets. That's the perfect thing I hear here. Separate those markets, because the medicinal market is incomparable in that regard. Absolutely. To the recreational market. So if we can all agree that that needs to happen first before we can identify what is really needed for patients and identify what is really needed in the rec market, then we can get along also very well. There will be no issue in those two different worlds. What I do see, however, is that on the cultivation side, from a medical perspective, you can also have multiple varieties. But and here's the main point: quite often, what you want is that patients who are also cannabis naive get access to a product that can be helpful to them or will be helpful to them, and a doctor that is confident and feels at ease in prescribing those products. Mm-hmm. So the requirements for that type of cannabis are so different compared to what is required in a recreational market, where you exactly mm-hmm. have craft product, where you have design, where you have a lot of, let's call it, like, it's like wine and beer making, basically. That's the comparison I also often made. So, and that's a good thing. Create a world in by itself in that. But the medical world, and that is something I think the recreational world should accept and actually embrace, that the medical world is a different world, just like the hemp world is a different world. Using hemp, you cannot compare that. The hemp requirements, you cannot make good hemp for building bricks from indica varieties, for instance. The fiber is not good, you know. The content of medicinal cannabis should be analyzed, should be tested, should be clinically trialed properly in order to be able to give that to patients who are also naive on cannabis use and who have to trust the doctor on them. And I think from a recreational perspective, don't see patients like you are yourself, but patients are different. And over the 20 years I've been in this, I've seen it. And I think it's one of the reasons where also Jürgen, with his Volcano Medic, the discussion we had we just noted that we met 16 years ago, 17 years ago for the first time in order to discuss these things. Mm-hmm. What does a patient actually need now? Anyway, but...
But that brings up a great point, and something that came out in our conversation with Jürgen is I asked previously, if you're purely a medical devices company, do you see yourself as a medical devices company? And you said something that was really eye-opening, is that everyone deserves the same standard of quality. Whether they choose to do it recreationally or medically, it's certified as a medical device, but the quality shouldn't suffer because of that. And I think this is a critical point in homogenizing the recreational and medical approaches. So I completely agree with Will that there's a place for a craft terroir-based product, and likewise agree with Chaling that there's a place for standardization and trials and specific ailments being unlocked by specific chemovar profiles. But if 60 to 70% of recreational cannabis patients are self-reportedly self-medicating, should we also raise the bar on the recreational product and offer a product that's really in line with the medical, maybe without some of the COAs and some of the specifications of how exactly it was produced, but come as close as possible to homogenizing these two worlds? And I'd like you to speak on that, because I think it's something that really came out in our pre-interview.
Yeah, as you said, for us as a device manufacturer and developer, of course, at the end, if the person, the human being who is inhaling cannabis, if his purpose is medical or non-medical, or sometimes medical and sometimes non-medical, or in between, or whatever, at the end of the day, he is inhaling it and is applicating the cannabinoids to his bloodstream, to his system. And of course, both should have the same treatment, you know, there's the same access to a device who does not have strange things in it, you know. And what do you have, let's say, with maybe with a Chinese device? And for the cannabis itself, it's I feel it's somehow similar. Also, a recreational user deserves a high quality material. If it needs to be regulated as much as a medical weed, a medical production with a EU GMP, that's the question. But if I'm using as a patient, or if I'm using as a recreational user, I want to have an excellent pure device, and I want to have excellent material. Yeah, I think this is very, very important. So I understand that the market and the prescription and the doctor is a completely different world. But I think from a user perspective, both want to have the same standards if possible. Yeah, I think and part of the legalization efforts is to provide a better weed, a better material to it. Yeah,
this is actually a sorry, John.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was gonna say, this is a panic point right now in the U.S. Yeah. Amongst all of the legacy growers and those that are actually commercially facing the recreational market today, which is, as HHS makes its recommendation, the medical recommendation is binding. What the DEA decides to do with it is up to the DEA, and ultimately it's the Attorney General who decides. But the query now that everyone's worried about is, will the FDA now have oversight across all markets in the U.S. and have a recreational overlay, a medical overlay? Does that mean that those growers who are non-EU GMP standard, which is a pharma API standard, will they need to further invest into their businesses to bring it up to a standard, mm-hmm. which is a gargantuan capital expense? And my personal opinion is, it depends on the decision maker and the market. So if you're a doctor, you're deciding what the treatment is for the condition of the patient. You want to have dose and effect. You want to have that repeatable and standardized. Mm-hmm. That's where Charling's amazing ability of producing crop after crop that is identical in concentration. And right now, we only measure THC and minor cannabinoids. But when you think about treatments, we're going to talk about minor cannabinoids, CBN, CBG, CBC. And you're going to see a broader spectrum of how doctors are prescribing. But in the medical market, that needs to be, again, standardized, so it is the same product every time. Mm-hmm. In the recreational market, the decision maker is the consumer. And if they at least have the same safety standards, the COA is there for mm-hmm. no toxins, no heavy metals, no microbials, no mold, then it's really up to the consumer to say, do I want a high THC, a balanced balanced CBD THC? Do I want to have a cookie? Do I want to have another modality? So it depends on the market, but you should have the ability of having both. I think the problem right now is the lack of understanding and clarity around which way it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And I think the second issue is that we've been waiting so long for regulation to come into play that, for example, one of our companies was actually very instrumental in slowing down the process in New York to finally bring social justice as one of the quotients to the program. The issue is that how some of these states have gone into decriminalization has just allowed sort of a free-for-all. You go to New York City, you can't walk around without smelling cannabis, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But if I'm a grandmother living in Murray Hill and I have my window open on a summer day, do I want to have cannabis wafting in?
It was apparently an issue for the U.S. Tennis Open. A lot of the athletes were
complaining.
Complaining, yeah.
So I think that we're in this post-prohibition, almost post-prohibition world, where we're going in fits and starts. There's going to be a lot of problems that come up. But the key is that we all sort of align ourselves on the long-term goal,
yep.
which is we need to have a very solid and supported medical market that delivers dose and effect to mm-hmm. a patient, yep. repeatable again and again. Mm-hmm. Safe product, known product, standardized product. And on the recreational side, we need to have regulations that allow for players in that market to have licenses, to be legal, and to have products that a consumer can choose. Mm-hmm. But it's a matter of the regs coming together, and that's why we're all, struggling for capital and struggling for issues, and it's just part of the framework of what we're working through.
Patrick, from your point of view, you're seen as a bit of a disruptor to the German medical establishment and the wholesalers that exist here, because you addressed this gray zone between the medical and recreational, or at least the medical consumers who are more insightful about their own need for cannabis versus having been told by a doctor that may be an option. So how do you see these two worlds either homogenizing or perhaps separating?
My co-founder, Florin, always says, where is a sleeping problem starting, yeah, and where is a recreational consumption ending. So as you've mentioned, there are so many people who today still treat themselves with products coming from the black market where they have no idea what's in there. They expose themselves and all co-consumers to serious risks. Yeah, especially in the United Kingdom, we see those artificial cannabinoids, which really cause a lot of problems. And this is why I feel that for many reasons, let's say a medical regime where the accessibility for a patient is not so overcomplicated would be the perfect solution, because there is products where the ultimate standardization is given, for example, with the Betacan varieties, and there might be other products where the focus is, let's say, on fulfilling all requirements which are mandatory to have a compliant human medicine, a non-sterile human medicine, but still being attractive for consumers who otherwise would medicate them on the black market. Whether that standard then must be GMP or not, I think that's a bit a conversation that is always done within that industry. There needs to be a standard, and if it's in a medical regime, it's of course the GMP regulation and the limitations for the COAs which are given by the regulator, period. Mm-hmm. But for all other dimensions, I think it's on the market to decide how people want to treat themselves. The, to me, important thing is people have to have a choice. And today, things at least here in Germany are improving a lot. But on the very same side, we still see that there is a lot of trouble about accessibility, about the discussion about, let's say, gray zones. We often hear that word of GMP washing. I think to us, that's all not too supportive when it comes to the establishment of a sustainable market where companies are then able to, let's say, concentrate on the non-financial KPIs way better, on producing more attractive products, offer them to a way broader public, and then also have the ability of also be profitable, because that, I think, always that's the entrance ticket to all other developments.
I'd like to go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry, Charlie.
Yeah, one more thing to that. I understand what you're saying, and to a certain extent, I also agree. There is a level of use that you can see as self-treatment by patients. You see many products that comply with under those regimes, even at in the painkiller system. I agree to that. The point I would like to make is that there are 90% of the doctors that nowadays don't want to prescribe. So there's no guidance for a group of patients that we are talking about is about 90% of the population. Those doctors want to see something different. I believe in cannabis as being a drug that can be really helpful to people. And I think we should open up that market as well. So that is where I always have been aiming for the highest standard and the highest level of standardization in order to provide access to a group of patients that otherwise don't have access. The patients that want access, and they are, you know, they know their way around, so to speak, fine. They manage themselves. It's also about home grow. Patients should have the right to home grow. Yeah, and but no. But the
people also don't produce their aspirin at home. You know, that to me it feels completely wrong.
No. I'm talking about patients with cancer. They are lying in their bed.
Yeah,
can they make their own medicine? No way.
Okay.
There is a large group of people that have to be serviced in an appropriate way when it comes to cannabis. And in this room, we should not, and especially with the mix-up of recreational and medicinal, we are forgetting that group of people right now. And if we're talking non-financial KPIs, which in the end are financial because it's business also, I'm very aware of that. But I think focusing on a segment in the market that makes sense from a product that makes sense, which is cannabis, to my mind. In that area, aside of the recreational, fine, beautiful things that you can have, it's perfect. But if we mix up too much, then you will still avoid entrance for a larger group of people by the doctors that don't want to prescribe, because it's still a blurred situation for them and they don't want to get into it.
I think that's one possible position, which I can share if I take that position, that point of view. I think there is maybe also an additional view possible. If, let's say, the whole stigma and the whole thing, let's say, gets normal, also people who today would never think about a cannabis treatment because it's, let's say, for the others, see that we had that about accessibility, democratization when it comes to pricing, but also when it comes to accessibility. There is telemedicine offers, there is different ways of accessibility, and the easier it turns for everybody, I think there's also a certain, and I judge that likelihood also relatively high, that patients who today decide against the cannabis treatment, and especially physicians who today decide actively against the prescription of cannabinoid-based therapies, would then no longer have the ability of sticking to that position, because it's getting more normal. And I think on this stage, compared to me, you have the best experience in realizing or in taking a look back and seeing that we've already taken a pathway or a part of that pathway to normalize how we act with cannabis as a society.
Agreed. 20 years ago, we were talking about parsley and not about cannabis because we need to nickname
exactly.
it.
Broccoli,
for,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, but that's a different story. But nowadays, again, 20 years, if I try to see 20 years ahead, we're still not there where I think we should be. And if we need investment, we need investment there. And I'm very happy to hear that, for instance, a company like Psyche from Israel, together with PMI, is diving into this right now. And they are going for FDA approval on the herbal product. And I think that's a milestone. And I hope that will be achieved soon.
I want to piggyback off of something you said in your last statement regarding 90% of doctors don't prescribe. Specifically, there's a lot been written and said about women's health conditions being significantly underrepresented in the grand scheme of cannabis medicine.
Well, across all medicine. I'm an ex-healthcare banker. Women's medicine is a tiny piece of the overall yes. medicine side. The fact that we have Viagra, is a statement of that.
And cannabis originally was prescribed for menstrual health and female health over 100 years ago. So I want to put the question on these four powerful men of what needs to change for that dynamic to change. Is it something inside the companies you're running that better representation and better research needs to be attained? Do you need to push your prescribers and pharmacists more? Does Will need to invest in female-run companies, or does Jürgen need to do toxicology studies and inhalation studies and differences between male and female, or is it all four?
Or does this panel not need to be four powerful men, but some other representation?
Yeah, exactly.
Look, I think, unfortunately, we're still in a paradigm for capital that it flows to the most standard places, which is, in the venture side, I'll be a little bit cheeky here, it's a white guy from California in a Patagonia vest. And trying to get black and brown communities, women represented that have businesses that can be fundable, they may have great business models, but they don't have access. And so I think that access to capital is one of the biggest hindrances to driving the market. We can also identify, but again, some myopic statements come out of this, likely. We don't live in a female health world as a white, North European male. And I think that what I love about cannabis is at its base, it really is far more multicultural than we see in anything in pharma. And so all we need to do is unleash that. We need to get capital to those players. We need to have businesses that already are doing great things by promoting these same theses in their businesses. That needs to be widespread. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we're hopefully going to change over time. But the fact that I'm sorry, we could all be interchangeable here, is just one statement for where the industry is today, and that needs to change.
Yeah, I think, of course, let's say a vaporizer to make it special, femaleized or something like that, maybe it's not the right thing. But of course, in your daily doing, you try, or at least I try to work with females as much as I can. Yeah, and it is really great to see their way to look to things and to manage things. It is different, and it is good to have the mixture. Sometimes limitations are also coming a little bit from having really enough candidates from this side. It is getting better over time, but I think overall we will lead to management groups who are highly diverse, and but we are still a little bit male dominant. Yeah.
And finally,
one word. Please. Cannabis wouldn't exist without females.
It is female.
It is the female plant. It is the power of the moon.
Exactly.
It is the power of life. It's, you know, cannabis is medicine, is money. It's everything is from the female side.
Everything.
Where we are seeing in the U.S. Kind of wild, wild west product segmentation for females and brands that are focused on females. Obviously, in the medical sense, it purely has to come from prescriptions. There need to be conditions and physicians that are matched with their medicine.
And research.
And spend for research.
Yes, it's the research thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy to see that it's being recognized that there are huge differences between the physics of women and men. I personally experienced it with my wife. It's about the differences that doctors make and can make now between the female body and the male body, even if it's about the regular organs, you know. And there are huge differences in that. I learned that. And I think it's necessary to pay, in general, way more attention to those things.
Mm-hmm. Let alone just the knowledge of the endocannabinoid system is so limited that it was only discovered in the 80s. Yeah. We already know that CB1, CB2 receptors, there are far more of those in the women's reproductive area than anywhere else in the human body. Mm-hmm. So there is a gender difference there as well. And cannabis, in the end, is a personalized medicine. Again, we talk about, when we delineate what structure is around medical cannabis, we focus on THC and CBD content, but we lack the profiling of terpenes and flavonoids and minor cannabinoids, which really, again, we call the entourage effect, but it is a personalized medicine. You can have the same dose of THC in one flower, one concentrate, and go to the next strain and have a completely different experience. It's not the THC. And in fact, if anything, THC may not be the right thing to focus on. It may just be the activator. And when you think about the terpene effect and what happens with minor cannabinoids, that all comes down to research. Again, we're in like these toddler days, infant days of cannabis right now. Yeah. So what we really need to do is just point out that this is the road forward. We need to put research capital behind that. Governments should be sponsoring this. This is it's not just harm reduction, it's cost reduction.
It's cost reduction. Cost reduction.
And we've protected our pharma industry for far too long.
NHS is the most perfect example.
And the fact that there's still a walled garden around the NHS is just, it blows my mind. But I was speaking in Parliament on Tuesday this week, and who knows, maybe things will change, but there seems to be a more openness to talk about just even POCA reforms. Mm-hmm. Maybe that starts getting a little bit more traction these days, but we're still in the early days.
Well, I think the key to non-financial KPIs, just like every continuous self-improvement mechanism, is continue to collect the data and baseline year on year to make sure you're continuously improving. So I want to thank my four illustrious panelists for a really great discussion today. I'm glad we were able to be frank and honest about some of the challenges surrounding our business, and thank you to everyone in the audience. This has been a great chat. If anyone has any last minute questions, you're welcome to them now.
Well, we do not have time for questions.
Shall I take one from here? So, I'm Raina Buller. I've worked in the industry and various different organizations for a while, including in regulations. I think I totally agree when you look at the medical side, and I would call it more the consumer, whether it's self-medicating, or whether it's recreational, they're two very different things. And when you think about the doctor's psyche, less than 5% of doctors prescribe because they don't know how to prescribe it. When you take a pharmaceutical product, you're giving them and saying, you start with this dose, you add on to the next dose, and you're giving them a very simple set of maybe four or five different products to choose from. You go to them and you give them and say, I've got 100 different strains. They have no idea what to do, and they shut down. Mm-hmm. And I think my question really is, should we have very clear demarcations in the industry that if you're a medical player, you focus on medical, you have a very specific set of products and you get that right to the standards so that doctors will accept them, regulators will accept them, and payers will pay for them. And if you're going on the self-medication side, then it's different whether you have your artisanal products and so on. And should companies take a stand on where they're going to be and build their businesses according to that?
Thank you. I think that's very much at the heart of what Xiaoling was mentioning, that there is a standardization that's necessary for the medical patient and the prescriber to know the consistency with which they could prescribe and match that. And for the recreational user, I think they're trying to find a standard for themselves, which is very different. But I do agree that we all need to find a way to communicate the effect of this plant in a manner that's conducive to healing people. And I think once we define the nomenclature, once we double down on that nomenclature, it becomes second nature. We all begin to understand it. But because of the industry that we're in, 20 years in, we don't have a set definition of terms, standards, or nomenclature. So a lot of the issues stem from simply not talking about the same things in the same language. So it comes back to unifying approaches and collecting more and more data. So thank you, everyone, for this wonderful panel. I wish you all a great rest of your Saturday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can find more podcasts on our channel, and we look forward to welcoming you to one of our upcoming events. All dates are available at cb-net.com.